And welcome back to another episode of the Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I am Tim Callender. I don't know who I am.
You said Stim.
I did. Maybe that's what I need.
And Brett's out there somewhere, I think.
Right as we started, we lost him.
Oh,
and he's back. But he's back.
The magic of online game playing.
Yeah, my son would be playing some online games right now, as a matter of fact.
I can hear it now. Whippersnapper, give me back my bandwidth!
Right?
Oh, well, this is an auspicious occasion. Today...
How was that?
Today is the first day, the first episode of the beginning of our seventh season doing
wow.
This podcast. This is the start of season seven, buddy.
If we were in dog years, we'd be like dead.
Possibly.
Yeah, right.
Do you realize that we are very, very near having twice as many episodes as the main series and Crusade combined? I think we might have actually come close to passing it.
Yeah,
no, yes, we are. We are past it.
Wow.
Take that, J. Michael Straczynski.
Yeah.
This is episode 260.
Wow.
260. Is it 260 or 261? Either way, it's a whole lot. I think we have been talking this out. We have overgeeked, if there is ever such a term.
I think we definitely qualify.
We have overgeeked. I agree. Babylon 5, but so yeah, today's episode will be discussing Lost Tales, which literally is the very, very last of the video content from the
yes.
universe of Babylon 5, mm-hmm. and we shall shed a slight tear, but I want to prepare everybody for what's coming up next. We are going to talk about the books. We are going to talk about the game, or the card games and the cards and all of the little collectibles and goodies and toys that allowed us to enjoy Babylon 5 beyond the TV screen. So I dug up my box of Babylon 5 extras, you know, the extra books I have that people are welcome to buy or borrow. And I got a surprise when I opened that box, because I haven't opened it in like a year. Staring up at me was my really old Dungeon Master's Manual.
Oh, no.
Whoa.
I forgot I had put my ancient Dungeons & Dragons manuals in the same box with the extra B5 books.
That's funny.
That's hilarious, because that old manual had that big demon on the front, and
yep.
our first episode has a demon in it. I thought that was kind of funny.
Awesome.
Coincidence? But, I think not.
Nope. So I'm sitting here like counting through the stuff that I have. I have the script book for The Coming of Shadows with
right.
literally a 50-page introduction by JMS.
Wow.
I've got the Dining On Guide. I have two copies of the Day of the Dead script signed by Neil Gaiman. Nanny boo boo.
Whatever.
I have two different versions of Creating Babylon 5. I have the security manual. I have the season guide, and I have the A to Z guide.
I've got the A to Z guide somewhere.
And
mine only went to Q. I was broke in college.
and I happen to have, you know, those season by season guides by Jane Killick?
Yeah.
All right, I have an extra one, extra two of season one, an extra three of season two, an extra three of season three, an extra three of season four, and an extra two of season five. So if you are missing any of those, Tim, I can send it to you.
I am missing all but season two, because I think you sent that one to me already.
So you're missing everything but season two.
But season two, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, for some reason, not that I wasn't as intent on getting some of those ancillary items, but they were also really hard to find, at least for me.
I got lucky in that back then I was in a Barnes & Nobles or a Borders at least 2 or 3 times a month. So I would see when the new season guide came out. I would see when the next novel came out.
Right.
And I
right.
had no problems picking up the novel or any of the books. I never saw the dining guide. You know, I saw the security manual. I think the security manual and the security manual I think was the only one I actually bought in a store. The others I had to get online. But it didn't dawn on me that any of these books would not be available. I just got used to seeing all of the Star Trek books and all of the Star Wars books being there all the time.
And why would you expect Babylon 5 to go away?
At least not in a year, you know? Yeah. 5 years, okay, yeah, sure. You know, because I knew books go out of print. Yeah, but I figured they'd be around for more than a year.
Yep, yep.
But no. So, and then that's what made me grab all of the trilogies. Because when I saw how fast the numbered books vanished off the shelves, I kept my eye out. And so when I saw the trilogies come out, I just grabbed all three. I'm like, right now, just not even hesitating. And I'm glad I did at the time, given what we know now.
Yeah, right.
So, I'm going to put up a list. I would like to talk about one of the special ones next week that all of us have, but I'm not sure all of us have all of them. Because neither of you guys have the security manual, right?
I do not.
Negative.
I don't. I got the A to Z guide.
Do you have the A to Z guide, Brett?
Nope.
He's got the A to Q guide.
A to Q
guide.
Mine goes to Q.
Do you have any of the books?
If it goes to Q, you're in the wrong universe, you know.
I was going to go there, but decided not to. and to answer your question, Summer, what's a book?
Oh, that's right. I keep forgetting. You don't read.
Not anymore. No time.
I have somehow managed to start eking out minutes and hours to do that very thing. It's an unusual and enjoyable thing.
I too have been reading more. Yeah. I have been reading more because I don't have television right now.
I kind of figure that if I buy myself a Kindle or some kind of expensive little doodad, it'll prompt me to do it.
You know what? I got to tell you, and I don't want to sound like a Luddite because I really do like my iPad quite a bit and my iPhone and all that. I don't enjoy reading books digitally. I do not enjoy it at all.
You don't enjoy digital reading?
Do not enjoy like digital books like Kindle books or EPUBs or whatever. I like having a physical object and turning pages. The other part of it is they all look the same, and that's as a graphic designer, that's a big beef for me.
Interesting. Now, I mean, obviously this is not the Kindle show or the iPad show or the digital reading show, but since we're on the topic.
Well, I mean, because it's not a bad topic, because one of the things that we've put out a call for is digital versions of these books that are out of print.
Yeah, that'd be, it'd be an opportune time. I have seen the iPad. I have played with Lori's device. Right. I have seen Mike Stackpole's Kindle. Was it Kindle or I forget which one. I think he has like one of all of them anyway, because he can. And I have actually tried reading stuff on my iPod Touch. I don't like it having it that small. I think the iPad, reading on the iPad, would be something I could get used to. But in this case, I understand where Tim is coming from. I am a Luddite and I like holding my books.
No, I don't get me wrong. I've not read anything digitally. I have, you know, the Kindle app for my iPhone, and I have a couple books that are out there. But it's not the same experience, at least on my iPhone. So I'm thinking maybe if I had a bigger screen, maybe that would help. But otherwise, as I sit here talking to you guys, I'm looking over at my bookshelf that has a metric butt ton of books on there that I've read. So I do, I have read in my past, but I look at them all and I'm like, I liked the experience of holding a book. I mean, for whatever reason, I enjoyed that experience. It was it was more tactile. It was more, you know,
The other thing about it is, and I'm sure some savvy person out there can put me wrong, and that's fine. I also enjoy pulling down a book that I've read before and just opening to a random page and reading three or four pages.
I'll agree with that.
And I don't know how you could quite do that in a digital format.
It depends on the book. I know what you're saying. Like, you go to a certain chapter and you read like a certain battle scene or a certain magic scene or whatever, something that really caught your attention that you remember even in as you're sleeping, just rereading that chapter. But I can't do that with everything. There's maybe like two or three books I could do that with. Everything else, even if I've read it before, I would want to start from the beginning again.
Okay.
Just to let the story slowly pull me back into that universe. You know? It's very, very rarely would I flip a book open to a certain scene and just dive right in. Because I'd find myself, was like, wait, there was another scene before this one. And, and I'm like, I might as well start at the beginning. I might as well start at the beginning and get it, you know, in sequence again. So,
right.
But I would like to get input from our listeners as guest contributors for some of these books, because I know there are people out there that have them.
And when you email us, put guest contributor in the header line, the title line. That will help as I sporadically go through these things. And if you've emailed us before, email us again, please.
Don't email me because I don't read.
No, exactly.
He doesn't. So, so next week, do we do the security manual first? Do we do the A to Z book first?
I think we need to do a feedback of Palooza, actually.
Oh, I'm down. I'm totally down for one of those.
Okay. So next week we'll do a feedback of Palooza, and the week after that we will, between the feedback of Palooza, between now and the feedback of Palooza, we will pick the first book we'll talk about.
Exactly.
Cool. Excellent.
All right. Well, now that we've sorted all that out, I believe we have some video to talk about.
Let's do it.
So we shall take a very, very quick break and come back and discuss our take on Lost Tales the second time around. After it's had a time to age like a fine wine.
Or goat cheese.
Awesome.
Critical Myth Podcast. An enlightening look at the best of genre television and its role as our modern mythology. A scholarly, in-depth discussion of story and its ability to reveal every facet of the human condition.
Look at that. There's some guy who's oozing.
I'm creating some not-so-good words.
Stranger in a Strange Land? Yeah, that was the point.
Yeah, not good, not good.
But I was going to say blasphemy, but okay.
The whole blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, shame that musical episode of The Wire got canned.
You know, oh, that's what the damn picture was.
Well, they could have showed me a box with a few wires out, and I think I would have bought it more.
There's a monster. Yeah. And there you go. What in the name of hell are we dealing with here?
The Critical Myth Podcast.
At criticalmyth.com. We're now on iTunes.
Lost Tales. Our last best hope for more Babylon 5 video. More Babylon 5 stories, I believe.
To quote Susan Ivanova, it failed.
Right.
It didn't exactly fail. It gave us more stories. It just didn't inspire Warner Brothers to pony up the bucks to give us more beyond that.
No, that's true. That's true. It was supposed to be the first in a series of direct-to-home video stories. This one was really titled, this collection is called Voices in the Dark, which is apt given the sort of the two similar thematic qualities of the stories. One was titled Over Here and the other was titled Over There. And where do we want to start? We should probably start with Over Here and go to Over There and then talk about our final lasting impressions of the whole thing.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right. So Over Here opens on Babylon 5 station itself, and actually the very first opening of it is shot at floor level, and you see this station worker writhing, having conniptions on the floor. The next thing we discover is that we get a voiceover from Colonel Lockley, who has requisitioned many strange things in her career for Babylon 5. Nothing she thinks is as strange as this, which turns out to be a priest. It's never really said if it's Catholic or Jesuit or what. Father Cassidy comes on board, and of course he's a little curious as to why he's been summoned here. And it turns out that this worker, Simon Burke, seems to be possessed with a demon. You traveled through the station to his holding cell. The temperature drops 20 degrees. There's this ungodly smell. And when the good colonel and the good father go into the presence of whatever it is that's inhabiting Simon Burke's body, Mr. Burke starts kind of being very creepy. He explains that he is one of the fallen who have been cast out from heaven and salted amongst the stars, is his word, by God, who knew that once man strode forth on legs of fire and steel across the stars, he would find nothing but emptiness and would slowly turn away from God and the church. And so, according to this creature within Burke, God had put these, entrapped these demons or creatures or whatever as a way of reminding the faithful of what the universe really was about, and thus ensuring that the pews would be filled and the churches across the planets would be full of new believers. Father Cassidy isn't quite yet convinced that this is a demon. You know, he thinks that maybe Burke has just kind of gone off his rocker, until flames engulfs encircle the station, and when they pop back into Burke's cell, he is levitating about 20 feet in the air in this giant cathedral of flame. So that leads Father Cassidy and Colonel Lockley to wonder what they're going to do. Cassidy, while he's not certain as to whether or not the creature speaking truth, as he tells Lockley, Satan is the prince of lies, but he will use the truth as it suits him. And the father goes on to say, you know, we not only need to find out what is the lie and where is the lie, but why is the lie? But he reasons he's only got two choices. He can either perform the exorcism, as the demon lays out for him, he can perform the exorcism here on the station in obscurity and cut him loose in the stars and thwart God's plan, or he can announce his presence and, of course, bring all sorts of onlookers and priests and religious faithful to the station and thus fulfill God's plan. So the father's not quite sure what to do. Well, Lockley, being Lockley, can't sleep, and she's trying to figure out what the deal is. And then she realizes that Burke spent some time on Earth. And it occurred to her that this all started after Burke came back from Earth. So she confronts a now-drugged Burke, who'd been doped up by the station's invisible doctor, because we never see him, that she realizes he isn't, this creature isn't from between the stars, but he had been actually imprisoned on Earth and somehow possessed Burke as a way of trying to make a, quote, ecclesiastical jailbreak.
I love that phrase.
There's actually, it is yeah,
funny right. about that phrase. Right.
And so at that point, she says, we're sending you back to Earth where you're in prison, and we'll have the exorcism performed there. And so Father Cassidy thanks Lockley, and then she has a kind of touching epilogue in which she talks about the reason she stays at Babylon 5 is because it is a place against the darkness where all the lights will be on. So 5 years on, Summer, what is your impression of Over Here now?
The premise is still intriguing.
Uh-huh.
The thought exercise of when man steps off Earth and lives among the stars forever, who will remember those demons, that right. evil? They literally is part of the punishment. If you follow that faith,
yep.
when man steps off Earth, he will leave that burden behind.
Yep.
And find new challenges, so to speak. And I find that a rather intriguing take on the war between, you know, heaven and hell.
Yep.
One literally I had never even heard of before. And I was like, huh, I kind of like that.
Yep.
So the premise is still intriguing. The arguments put forth by the possessed one were not quite as convincing.
Uh-huh.
And I'm gonna say that the crisis of faith that Father Cassidy talked about was very poignant. Mm-hmm. I mean, he talked about it. He says, you yep. know, man stepped into the stars, saw that there were no angels, and
yep. not a delinquent seraphim.
And mm-hmm. just for, you know, forgot, just left it behind as unnecessary, or as what do you say, irrelevant.
Yeah.
And so that questing for how do you redefine faith when the icons that you've been clinging to all this time don't apply anymore?
Sure.
And like I said, the thought exercise of they're stuck here on Earth and we're not was good, but I think I don't know if it was too short, or maybe if it was 10 minutes longer we could have had a little bit more meat in there. There could have been a little extra something, a typical JMS twist in there beyond what, you know, Lockley figuring out what the game was. It was a nice peanut butter and jelly sandwich, but I was really, really looking for a Philly cheesesteak, you know?
Yeah, I kind of get the sense that it almost felt like this would have made a better script for an Outer Limits or Twilight Zone sort of show. Because because at no point in time here's where it breaks down for me. For the most part, the dialogue and the characterization is strong. There are some flaws, and I'll touch on those in a minute. And I agree with you. I like the fact that when Father Casti comes on board, he's got sort of this jovial resignation to his fate. That he, in a sense, he's the last of a dying breed, but he claims to have reconciled himself with that. So I kind of liked the verbal sparring, and I kind of liked that Lockley was able to sort of figure it out and put the pieces together. But the stuff of the obvious supernatural element, they mentioned that he was covered in blood that had no DNA in it, the tendrils of fire that encircled the station, the cathedral of flames that he's levitating in, those are left completely unexplained. And if what was imprisoned was really some sort of I'm confused watching it this time around. This is the same confusion or consternation I had the first time around. I'm not sure whether or not these are actual alien entities that are trapped on Earth for whatever reason, or if the idea is that they are truly demons of the biblical order. And if it's the former, then it doesn't make sense why they have those powers, unless it would be nice for them to say, well, you know, it was telepathic whatevers. But that doesn't explain why the station was experiencing weird energy spikes. Now, if it's the latter, biblical demonic things, that's all well and good, but it doesn't fit in the Babylon 5 universe. It's worse than Day of the Dead.
Wow.
Well, because it becomes just pure magic.
Right.
You wanted a deeper significance and a deeper meaning for the displays of power from the demon.
Yes, I wanted some explanation that fit within the universe. It seemed like that the script waffled between the two points.
Maybe they could have had Galen pop in there and say, oh yeah, we've seen these guys before. It's this and that.
Right.
Or him just come out and say, just kidding.
Or okay, Galen to right. show up and say, oh, you know what? No. He's really a rogue techno mage and he's using his powers and we will take care of our own order and waft them
so
away.
So your problem was that there was nothing in the story that was uniquely Babylon 5, because this story could have easily been transplanted to Star Trek Next Generation, the Ardala
episode. I was going to say, actually, it would have made a not a bad original Star Trek script. And in fact, it felt in some ways like Who Mourns for Adonis, when the Enterprise is grabbed by this giant hand that turns out to be from Apollo, the Greek god, you know, and of course it goes on to discuss, well, maybe these super powerful aliens show up on Earth in Greece 3,000 years ago. Yeah, they'd be mistaken for gods. Mm-hmm. You know, that was kind of the flavor for over here. If Burke was able to, or the creature inside him could manifest those powers in a physical manner, which every indication is that they mentioned this blood that he was covered in. Okay, that's a physical something. They mentioned the smell. That's a physical something. So by that logic, you would assume that the giant flames encircling the 5-mile-long space station are actual real flames.
Something, yeah.
Okay? Then you can't just put that out there and then never bring it. If it was that powerful, why is it sitting in a cell? Why isn't it wreaking havoc throughout the station and they have to make the choice? Well, look, it's either us, it or us. You know, there was the only problem to solve was of an existential nature. And while I generally don't mind that sort of thing, there wasn't a whole lot of urgency to this.
Mm-hmm.
They could have just left him in the cell and for the next 6 months while they pondered what to do with it.
Okay.
I mean, that's the biggest downfall to this script. It felt like it was transplanted from somewhere else. Ultimately, you know. Now, some of the specific problems I have with it is that I think it gets a little talky at points.
Agreed.
You know, I think there's a lot of stuff in there that's great JMS writing. You know, when Father Cassidy talks about, you know, when we got to the stars on legs of fire and steel, that's very poetic. When Burke first starts talking about, you know, in that first encounter with Father Cassidy and the Colonel and you got that great camera work that was very disorienting, and Cassidy is trying to give him the exorcism test, if you will. You know, well, you know, what is my name? And he just starts going sadness and uselessness. And it's like, and that you can see in Cassidy hits home, even though he puts on the brave face. Well, those are just descriptions. That's kind of the theme. I think to your point, Summer, if we could have expounded on some of that or expanded some of that, it might have had more meat and more weight.
Because the one thing that struck me this time, and I think we mentioned it before, some of those tricks could have been explained away by a very powerful rogue telepath.
Right.
And the fact that that was never mentioned as an option. Because I think, or they said it was 10 years on, so there's no more Psi-Corps anymore.
Right.
The telepath war has happened.
Yep.
Telepaths are free. There is an oversight committee or agency, but it doesn't have the far-reaching ability that the Psi-Corps did or wanted. But they should have still said, you know, and Lockley could have sent out a message to that agency and say, hey, can you send a really strong telepath our way? Because I got something weird here.
Right, right. Well, and at one point when they're talking about the odor, and Lockley says, why do you explain that? And he goes, you know, that could be a hoax. And Cassidy says, it could just simply have been suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing that should have suggestion. Oh, man, maybe he's a telepath.
And wouldn't it have been fun to have a discussion between a telepath and the priest going back and forth on what's a power and what's supernatural?
Yeah. Right.
I would have loved to have seen a debate like that.
Right.
Even if it lasted like a minute, you know, something along the lines of, the arguments that Brother Theo and the other reverend had, you know, they said volumes in two sentences, you know?
Yes. Right. Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So.
And so, you know, so there's the problem.
Yes.
So I got to tell you guys, mm-hmm. for me, I just didn't really connect with it at all, to be honest with you. It's like I watched it, but I just didn't care. I kept waiting for something to hook me.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's it.
And nothing hooked me. And so I watched it, but it was like I could have been watching, I don't know, I could have been watching golf. I could have been watching. I mean, it was just there for me.
It's like I said before. There was nothing uniquely Babylon 5 about it to draw us back into that world to make us feel like we were really there.
Yep. I did have some of the same issues that you had, Tim, to be honest with you. Especially the one thing I sat there and said to myself is, how are there flames in space? There's no oxygen. I literally said that out loud when I was watching that. You know, but for that episode, the other thing too for me is with Lockley, you know, we only got to see her in one season of B5, and even then she was part of an ensemble, and so we didn't get a lot with her. And so to make her a main focus of this, for a character that I just really didn't connect with, that I didn't have that big of a connection with in the first place, just really was like, meh, you know, I was like, okay, thanks. I see what you're trying to do here, but I needed more, and I didn't get it out of this one. So it left me just kind of blah.
Yeah.
You know, the best way I think is the summary you put it is there was nothing that made me feel connected to the B5 universe other than the fact that I recognize that station, I recognize that actress, and I recognize those clothes.
Yep. Right. It makes me wonder if it wasn't a script that JMS had written for something else. Now, or based off of a story that he'd written for something else and repurposed for this. You know, because the other part of it is, as I said back when we were doing our season 5 critiques of this, I really feel that from my point of view, I don't think JMS really brought Lockley's character into focus like he wanted to, or for whatever reason. You know, she remained from a writing point of view, not even an enigma, just kind of like. Never really quite had a handle on what he wanted to do with that character.
Yeah.
And to your point, Brett, like you're saying, it's like there's this hint that of this sort of religious thing going on. Well, you know, we didn't see that in River of Souls.
Yep.
You know, and boy, if there was ever a time to have a conversation about church and what you believe, that would have been a fine place to have it, you know. And we didn't get that from her then, and so, it just didn't quite all fall together.
Yeah, it really wasn't firing on all cylinders for me. I will say, you know, you can make that discussion about the more we learn scientifically, the less we believe in religion. You can make that discussion, and you can understand the logic of, well, the further when you get out to the stars and you see that there is no angels, you're going to be kind of bummed out.
Right.
Well, okay. But you know, they didn't really touch enough of that. They didn't touch enough of anything in this. Now, granted, it was only what 30 odd. It was, how long was this thing?
34 minutes tops.
Yeah. 37 minutes. Yeah. Something like that. Right. And so you don't get an opportunity to sit there and go, you know, knee deep in something, you know, when you don't have that much time. But the problem I had was, you know, when we had River of Souls, when we had Third Space, you know, those were 2 hours long. And so it was in a universe that was pretty well established and with characters that you cared a lot about. Yep. And so, yes, they were standalone. But they still somehow played into things, or if they didn't play into them, you didn't really care because you knew enough about what was going on, and you cared enough about what was going on to let it all go.
Well, the stakes were also set higher, you know. I mean, there was, and while I'm not a fan of, you know, the obligatory, the world will be destroyed unless we do something. The fact of the matter was, it was. Something's going on, the station's in trouble, you know, and we have something bad will happen. We can see it coming down the pike if we don't make decisions and do something, whatever that was. There was none of that urgency in this, you know, if they had made it much more of a Silence of the Lambs kind of thing, that Burke was able to get inside people's heads and really mess them up. That would have been interesting because then it becomes a psychological thriller, and that's a whole other thing.
Right.
I think we missed the ensemble. I think we missed having Garibaldi there to say, I don't trust this guy, you know. And
yes and no, though. Yes and no, though.
It could have added more dimension, I think.
It would have helped, but because the next episode, right, stands in stark contrast to that.
Yes, and to that point, this is definitely over there is where the stakes are that much higher. Okay, and so here comes the recap really quick. This is happening concurrent, both of these episodes. It is the celebration of the establishment, 10 years anniversary of the establishment of the Interstellar Alliance. President Sheridan is flying from Minbar to the station. Along the way, he is going to pick up a representative of the Centauri Republic, one Prince Ventari. And just before they make the rendezvous with the Centauri shuttle to pick him up, in his sleep, President Sheridan is visited by one Galen, our friendly neighborhood technomage, who shows President Sheridan a vision of the destruction of New York City by an unknown, well, he's an apparently unknown fleet, but what Galen tells him is that this destruction has been wrought by the Centauri under the leadership of Emperor Ventari, who, as he comes to power in the future, will realize that the one power that was always prevented Centauri Prime from reattaining their heights as the Lion of the Galaxy has been Earth, and so he's come to take his vengeance. So Galen, as the vision ends, tells Sheridan, well, you know, it's really quite simple. You have to kill Ventari. And, of course, Sheridan comes awake in a cold chill and knows that it really is a real thing because that's how technomages work. Well, when he meets Ventari, it turns out Ventari is a rather young man. He is the son of disgraced and assassinated Emperor Cartagia. Ventari is there partly as a representative of the Centauri Republic to the celebration, because Londo just doesn't get out so much anymore these days. But also is in a way of allowing a certain amount of safety, because as Ventari puts it, he's third in line to the throne, and he's a target for 4, 5, 6, and 7, as he imagines. Sheridan again has a vision of great space battles, and he realizes that he's got to do something. So as a publicity stunt for ISN, he's going to ride a Star Fury into B5, the Shining Knight returning on his space steed, if you will. And so he convinces Ventari, who's something of a spaceship buff, hey, we'll fly some. You will fly in together. It'll be really neat. But, you know, Sheridan is thinking, well, here's his chance. We'll make it look like an accident and kill Ventari. But as he's lining up the prince in his sights and he's starting to think about it, he really starts really thinking about what Galen said to him, which was basically that this is something that could be as opposed to will be. And then Sheridan realizes, you know, maybe the thing to do isn't to kill Ventari, but to befriend him. And when they get to the station, Sheridan says, look, you know, you want to need a safe place. We'll provide you haven on Minbar. You can come stay with Delenn and I. And, of course, Sheridan's thinking is that they'll be able to take him away from the plotting and the Byzantine plottings and whatnots and goings on at the Centauri Royal Court, and that they'll basically be able to make him into a friend of the Alliance as opposed to an enemy. And Galen, when he reappears from behind Sinclair or Sheridan's shoulder, basically kind of says as much. And that's the end of that. But mm-hmm. I'm with you, Brett. There's something. It's less of the ensemble because Ventari is a new character. We've seen Galen and Sheridan before. Okay, so that's maybe two familiar characters as opposed to one with Lockley. But it's still very much a small story, but the stakes are so much higher.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And don't get me wrong. It still had a couple of spots where I was like, eh, really? But overall, I watched that one much more intently. Mm-hmm. I was way more into it. And I cared a lot more, about it. You know, there are some things, you know, when I looked at it and I was wondering, when I'm looking at what the vision that Galen shows, you know, Sheridan of New York City being destroyed. And my first thought was, really, how did they get that close? You know, but again, you could pick this thing apart for those little things, but generally speaking, you got the fact that this was somebody that Sheridan had to sit there and had this moral dilemma.
Yes.
Right? And right. That was it. There was the moral dilemma. And you'd seen Sheridan wrestle with moral dilemmas before. And be told you are, there's only one way this is going to happen and you've got to go this route. And he finds another way to sit there and goes a different direction that nobody saw coming. And there was that in this too, but generally speaking, I just got into it more. I cared more. The characters were people I cared about. Even this, even the, you know, the Prince of Antari, right? Who you've never seen before in your life, you know?
Right.
I bought that whole thing. Hook, well, line, and sinker.
And I'll tell you,
because I know the Centauri and I know how they work.
Right. Right. And one of the things that I loved about it in just two or three lines, this is one of the things that Straczynski, I think, is a master of, is the shifting perception and shifting perspective. When Ventari and Sheridan first meet and they get to talking about, you know, well, you know, I'm third in line to the throne. And Ventari says, the only person I don't have to worry about is that idiot Virkato. And Sheridan says, I've known Veer. He's a good man. He's got a good heart. And Ventari just looks at him and goes, he murdered my father.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. and the damned thing of it is, both are right.
No, absolutely
Brett, that's the thing that this one has that the other one doesn't have.
Mm-hmm. Nope, you're absolutely right.
You know, and then on top of that, Galen is, as he tells, you know, talking with Sheridan, Sheridan says he's just a boy. What am I supposed to do? And Galen gives him, again, from the absolutist point of view, Hitler and Genghis Khan were just boys with toys until they grew up to become murderers.
Yep.
Well, you know what? Galen's also right.
Yep. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. It just, I don't know if it was, I mean, much better written. I mean, it was just, but I connected so much more to this, and I cared so much more about that whole thing. And you know, and I did have that one thought where the one thing that didn't get said in the episode, but I also thought was, you know, a sound strategy that I could see Sheridan probably thinking somewhere but never vocalizing, is, you know, if this person is going to be somebody who could potentially sit there and rain destruction down on Earth, you know, you keep your friends close, you keep your enemies closer. And what's better than sit there and have this guy right where I can sit there and see him the whole darn time?
Well, I mean, Sheridan says, basically, we'll get him on Minbar and we'll start teaching him a different way of thinking.
And that was the whole point of the conversation at the end, where Ventari asked him, it's like, how do I know you're not trying to work some angle? He says, you don't. He says, you're not going to deny it? No.
Yeah, right. Yeah, which for Ventari, is amazingly, that's a level of honesty he's never experienced.
Yeah, yeah. It's candid. Yes. He says, yeah, I may be trying to get a foothold in your court, but I'm giving each of us the chance to get to know each other better.
And
yeah. Does anybody else sit there and find it interesting, right, that the one thing that was brought up was about, you know, that idiot Virkato, but yet Veer spent time on Minbar.
Yeah.
And look what it did to him.
Yep.
You know? So, I mean, it's good interesting, point. Right, that he sits there and he brings that up, but yet he's going to go right down the same path as that idiot Virkato,
right?
You
right,
know,
right.
I found that whole thing really interesting. You know, but I really cared much more about this, and to the point where I was saying, "Man, if they had just made this longer and ditched the other thing altogether, I'd been so much happier."
You know, and again, it gets back to why do we care more? Is because a character that we know and love is put in what appears to be an impossible moral situation. And that's not what's going on with Lockley. There's no impossible moral situation that she has to work her way out of. It's just, is this thing a demon or is it a whatever?
Well, they tried to allude to that a little bit with the priest character, but I didn't buy it. You know, it's
right.
your soul will be in jeopardy. There was no fear.
Right, exactly. That's exactly
it's
right.
It's like it was a B story. Maybe she just made it a B story to the A story of the main.
Well, and if it had been an episode of Babylon 5 proper, that's probably how it would have been played out. There's no doubt.
Because that was, what, 33 minutes long?
No, the over there was a good 40 to 45 minutes long.
No, the first one.
The first one is 30 or 34 minutes. You know what? Yeah. I'm going to where's my DVD player here? I can tell you real quick. Mm-hmm.
Cuz the entire DVD is only 72 minutes.
Right. That's right.
Right.
So
they're just about the same length as I recall. They weren't there. I mean, there may have been a couple extra minutes.
It seemed like there was so much more.
Well, and I wonder how much of that is the intensity of the characters, and believe me, I'm a fan of Tracy Scoggins as Elizabeth Lockley. I think she just doesn't get the credit she deserves for what she did with that character. But Gale, the way that Peter Woodward and Bruce Boxleitner interacted with each other.
So much more comfortable.
But the chemistry, just the scenes between them.
Mm-hmm.
They both slipped back into their roles. And
that's what I'm saying. They were very comfortable.
Their characters played off of each other very well. I mean, they didn't interact a whole lot in Call to Arms. But you
enough.
Still got the impression that they had crossed paths in that intervening few years.
Yes.
And literally, the mild annoyance that Sheridan had with him reminded me of, he's like, you know, I'm sick of you guys in my head.
Yeah.
You know, and the
just
the,
when I think my life is going good, you guys keep showing up to ruin the party. I love that. Don't you guys have any other hobbies?
No. You're missing the point. The subtext was like just like those damn Vorlons. There was a subtext of, you know, I've already had Vorlons in my head. You guys, you know, you're parlor tricks, you know, compared to them. So.
Right.
But and he's like, why my brain? You know,
yeah.
There was a genuine ease of the banter that went back and forth, and that brought back the familiarity, the warmth, the comfort zone that we have with Babylon 5, with what we know as Babylon 5. And I think that's there was a piece missing from Lockley's story, because it wasn't really Lockley's story.
Yeah,
she was just there to facilitate.
She was a facilitator. Exactly. That's a great way to put it,
yeah,
Summer.
Right.
She was a facilitator, and that was
she mediated the conflict, whereas Sheridan was right in the middle of it.
Right. Which feels back to the feeling that the Over Here story could have been told in any given science fiction universe, because it didn't depend upon the character of the characters. The outcome was not dependent upon who those characters were specifically.
Yeah. And I think one of the other problems I think for me that I had also, if they're going back to that first one, was there was no sense of drama. Because it never once occurred to me that this was not all going to work out just like it was supposed to. You know what I mean? There was never going to be like the, oh, well, we just lost all of Brown section or something like that. There was never any element of danger or anything like that. Right. You know?
I'll admit, I never really felt like that Sheridan was going to blow Ventara away. In fact, the weakest part of that was when he's in the Star Fury and he's muttering to himself, "Yeah, I knew the weapons were, you know, there was something wrong and something malfunctioned," as he was trying to kind of work up his alibi.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably the weakest part of that script for me.
Yeah,
just because it was just kind of wordy, and like I said, I didn't think Sheridan was going to blow him away. That, to me, wasn't where the drama was. The drama was how does he get out of not blowing him away?
Yeah. To me, the drama was how do you get this kid to open up and soften up?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. what was the plan going to be? You know, come visit Earth. No, come stay with us on Minbar. You know, you'll be safe there.
Mm-hmm. I think the second episode is just much better. But I was at least happy to see it. You know, I got something. And I always wanted to say this in a very public forum, and now I get my chance to be on my soapbox to say this. But what a difference a few years will make in terms of computing power and the ability to render scenes, because the station was beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah.
The detail on the station was just gorgeous.
Yes.
And
well, the interstellar backgrounds are phenomenal. The rendering of the jump gates and the jump points.
The slickness of the Valen class cruiser as it popped into quantum space.
Yes.
What about New York there? That was a big Fifth Element homage with them looking down and seeing all the cars and it comes by. That was beautiful.
Right.
Yep.
And speaking of homages, you know, we as kind of goofy as it was, I mean, it was obviously a nod to the hardcore fans. I have to admit, as sentimental as it was, the references to Jakar and to Dr. Franklin just, oh my God, I don't want to say heartbreaking, but it really was kind of, you know, you knew what that was about, you know, and that was just, it was sad, you know, that they couldn't be there. And it was, you know, and that was on the heels of the in universe sadness of when Sheridan is talking with the reporter, Miss Chambers, and she says, well, is Emperor Malari going to be there? And, you know, and Sheridan talks about, you know, Londo would laugh. He'd laugh from the bottom of his shoes all the way up, and he just gets this. I hear he just doesn't laugh so much anymore. And it's like, and that was heartbreaking, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was like, and then to get the real, you know, the real life heartbreak on top of it, it was just like, oh.
Mm-hmm. Now I wonder if this movie had been done, say, in 2009. Instead of 2007, would there have been a Blu-ray version?
No.
I would agree with that too. No.
Okay.
Too early for Blu-ray. Yeah. No.
I honestly, I don't know if it costs them anymore to make it. I don't know, but I venture to say that they're probably. Despite our better pleadings, there probably isn't enough people out there who bought it to sit there and make them justify throwing it out there on Blu-ray. I mean, Firefly has a massive following of hardcore fanatical fans like B5 does, and it just finally got itself on Blu-ray. So I think you'd be waiting a while if there was ever even a possibility.
Well, no, my idea was. If it had been available at the time, would it have come out in both formats to begin with? And you know, just to, you know, because them going back and doing it, I know that's not going to happen. But if it had come along a little bit later, would they have put out a Blu-ray edition at the same time?
I'm still going to say probably not.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
now,
go ahead. No, go ahead. No, go ahead. Nope. You.
Okay. I have to throw a little shout out to Neil, who's in the chat room, who reminded me that there is a script for the Garibaldi story in the TV movies book.
Yes. Yes, and that's something we need to remind all the listeners that there was supposed to be a third story, which was supposed to be Garibaldi on Mars. And I don't remember what the plot of that is, and I'll have to see if I've got my TV movie book. It's in a box somewhere. But
Would you like me to give an overview?
Yes, please. I'm going to say no.
I took the opportunity while you were expounding to run into my room and the other room.
That's why I do that. It's not because I'm long-witted. It's to give you opportunities.
To run into the next room, grab the book, bring it back out here, and flip through the script really quickly to remind myself. Okay, I will give a quick overview of the Garibaldi story that we didn't get on video right after this break.
Hey Kev, Dad's asleep. Let's do an experiment.
What experiment?
The one from Mythbusters, where they put the guy's hand in the water to see if he would pee on himself. Let's try it on Daddy.
Hey kids, what are y'all doing?
Nothing, Mom.
Do you have your own little geeks? Need some ideas to keep them out of trouble? Well, check out the How to Grow Your Geek podcast.
We have cool kids' books and movie reviews.
We have awesome game reviews.
And we have interviews, advice, and a whole lot of fun. Check us out at
howtogrowyourgeek.net.
And we're back with the unfilmed Garibaldi story.
Give us a quick rundown, yeah.
To sum up, Garibaldi's on Mars, lamenting the fact that he did not accept Locke's invitation and actually go to Babylon 5 for the party. And he's making his way to a dig that one of his employees has hushed up, so to speak.
Okay.
And this employee, Russ, is telling him, you don't understand, this is the find of a century. The find, this will be worth billions and billions. He's like, right. He says, no, seriously. He had found some pottery that had some markings on it that were unfamiliar. But because of the pressurization, the air ratios, they didn't survive when he brought them up from underground. So he's got to take Garibaldi down there to see all the stuff for himself. On the way there, Garibaldi's worried. You know, what if somebody else knows about this stuff? Because if it's worth billions, that'll get a lot of people's attention, yada, yada, yada. And of course, they get ambushed.
Of course.
Of course. The quick version is, the elevator that Garibaldi and Russ were taking down crashes through the shaft.
Right.
And they're separated. Garibaldi's alone. All he has is the link. But he's not, there's nobody there.
Okay.
So he's literally monologuing to himself, talking on the link, trying to raise Russ or anybody who can hear him.
Right.
To let them know he's still alive. He's hurt, not badly, but he's still alive.
Right.
And
hurt enough that he can't really help himself so much.
Well, he can't dig out through several hundred feet of Mars.
Yeah, okay. That is a problem.
A little bit of a problem there. So he's walking around these caverns, and he mentions on the link that he's found some of these shards. And I forget. I mean, literally, I just went through it really quickly. He comes through, he ends up talking to Russ. He hears Russ on the link, and he's talking to him, and they're trying to guide them to different areas. And Russ's language is very cryptic. Extremely cryptic.
Yeah.
And Garibaldi's not quite sure what he means by some of the stuff. And as he comes around a corner, he sees this entire city of crystal and onyx, I believe. It said it was crystal and onyx.
Right.
And it's amazing. And he's trying to figure out what they're going to do. And at some point in there, where's my page here? Garibaldi makes contact with some of his other people on the surface, and they said they're going to get to him pretty soon. And he's like, make sure you find Russ, too. And they're like, we already found Mr. Malone. He's like, what do you mean? Well, he's dead. What? Mm-hmm. Russ is dead. And Garibaldi's like, then who have I been talking to for the past couple hours?
You're right, yeah.
And an entity makes its presence known, shall we speak?
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a really good way to explain, but it's a Martian.
Okay.
Okay, it's a real bona fide Martian. And the alien basically repeats some of the cryptic stuff that he said. And I'm going to read it here. Because he does something, I guess, to hide the city or rebury it so that they can't get to it. And Garibaldi's like, why? And the alien says, the child cannot become the man unless the parent lets go and walks away. But we are watching. We are with you through all the slow ages to the end of time. We are with you, our son. And they walk away. They disappear.
Whoa.
Yes.
Whoa.
And Garibaldi walks out of the rubble. Or they finally get him out, but all the stuff is unavailable, you know, hidden from man.
Right.
They have gone away to let us step out into the light on our own, so to speak.
Right.
And the description of the alien in there made me think of the aliens in the Uplift Saga.
Well, which aliens in the Uplift Saga? Oh, just the general idea of...
Idea of, you know, another race.
A patron race of a...
Right.
Race. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's the story. That's the script that's in the TV movies book. I don't think that one's available anymore.
I already got a t-shirt. Garibaldi Grox.
Nice. Yeah.
Nice. Very nice.
Done, sir.
Well, as we know, that script ended up being unproduced because it was going to be far more expensive to actually produce it. And listening to your synopsis there, it's easy to understand why. A giant city of crystal and onyx. I don't care if they're doing that digitally or whatever. That's still time on render farm.
The if you think about it, since the entire thing takes place on the surface of Mars and underground on Mars, it sounded like that would have been 98% green screen.
Yep. Well, you know, that leads to the next point that I wanted to talk about before we wrap this up. Other than the beautiful renders that we saw, it really, while I was aware of it at the time it was released, looking at it now, you can really see how that was done on the cheap. You know, you could tell that the B5 corridor, because it's just one corridor, you don't really see anything branching off, you know, although they try to make it look bigger than it was, had the same columns on the sound set that are in the Valen. Now, why a starship has columns in it, I don't know.
Oh, wait a minute. We saw something similar in the Mimbari cruisers.
Not columns. These look like they are dressed up poles that support the roof in a soundstage, or a sock factory or something.
Did we get any corridor walks at all in this?
One. Yeah, we did.
We got one.
Well, there's one corridor walk and it's basically back and forth. It's down to the cell where Burke was being held, and then kind of back up to a lift, and then back down to Burke's cell. And similar on the Valen, you get a corridor where Ventari walks up to Sheridan. They go around a corner, but you never track around the corner. It's just basically the same set. Now, the other part of it is everything's carpeted. Go back and look at the floors. They're all carpeted.
Yes, the floor in the hallway that was supposed to be Babylon 5 did have carpet on it. And I believe the carpet mat, the carpet on the floor matched the gray carpeting on the walls.
Yes.
That's so, no, literally.
It also matched the carpet in the viewing chamber on the Valen.
So and yes, seeing what they had to do to stretch the money that was given them, I do not begrudge JMS folding his arms across his chest and saying, "I'm not doing this again unless you guys give me some real money."
Right, right. And
I understand. I understand completely. Yes.
Right, and you remember the fan outcry when he said that.
Mm-hmm.
At the time. But
seeing it after, because in 2007 we were starved. We would have taken Babylon 5 stories if it had been beaten upside the head with the worst, you know, with the worst movies like Forbidden Planet and Ice Pirates and any other piece of dreck you could imagine. We would have taken that.
Well, Forbidden Planet is not direct, but never mind.
Well, what's Plan 9 from Outer Space. That's what I'm thinking
of. Oh, there you go. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Space Herbies.
Don't go there. But yeah, so we would have taken anything and called it wonderful.
Yes.
Now, with the passage of time, we appreciate what we got at the time.
Yep.
And I do understand better why he said, "I'm not going to do this on the cheap again," because it cheapens the experience.
Yep, right. That's a good way of looking at it. Well, you remember one of the extras on there is the sock puppet theater thing.
Yeah, it's awesome. You know,
and that was very much, well, look, we found a way to do it on the cheap. Here it is.
Mm-hmm. So yes, I completely understand why. And it is a very, very stark contrast. I had no TV on Super Bowl Sunday. I couldn't even stream the Super Bowl. So, yeah, darn NBC Universal and their friggin' Silverlight crap. Give me something that's Mac compatible, damn it. Anyway.
Yep.
So my second choice for TV viewing that day was Babylon 5 Season 3.
Yeah, there you go.
I watched 18 of those episodes right in a row all day.
Yeah.
I guarantee it was much better than the pre-show to the Super Bowl.
Oh, I know it was better. Brother. I know it was better than the pregame. The pregame and the pregame to the pregame.
To the pregame leading up to the pregame pregame.
Yep. I know that for a fact. They can't stretch that puppy out any farther, could they?
No.
And the detail in the sets struck me, because I don't think I've actually sat down to watch a like mini marathon of Babylon 5 since we did those episodes for the show a couple years
ago. Right.
So that was my first time going back in what, 3 years, 4 years?
Right.
And I'm sitting here going, wow, this really does still hold up. The sets, for me, the graphics, the storylines, the emotion, it's all still there.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it's only part of the way there in the Lost Tales,
it's because of the economy's scale, because he was able to take that money and spread it out and get the every little bit of extra money he used very efficiently throughout that whole year.
Right, and he could.
They should
have
gave him 25% more money, just right on top. And said, "Okay, here's 25% over top of what you would have needed, because we know you're going to need some extra stuff."
Right.
So, several years later, I will be less grumpy about JMS's decision to tell Warner Brothers to go pound sand until they give him more money. So,
And if that means we get no more Babylon 5, well, I respect that.
Agreed.
Yeah,
tragic, but I understand.
It is, right. So all in all, Lost Tales.
Fast forward to the first half.
Lost Tales. I would love to see a follow up of Prince Ventari's adventure, either in comic book form or short video, online streaming kind of thing.
Yeah.
because there's so much more story there, and we just got the tip of that iceberg.
Wouldn't it be great if he ended up being like Veer's best buddy or something?
Well, you know, sure. I mean, that's something that would have been neat to see, and I loved Keegan McIntosh's performance in that. I think he really brought that character to life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree.
And if I don't know, Jeremy, if you've actually heard the interview we did with him, he absolutely loved it. He was eating
up
day and night. So,
yeah, he was. You know, he's a true fan. So,
yep, he's a geek. One of us. Yes. One of us.
All right. Well, any more that we need to say about Lost Tales?
Nope.
No, sir. I think we beat it to death.
I think we have recapped it handily.
Yep. Well, then I think it's time to get out of here.
All right. Yes, next week will be a feedback-a-palooza. Yep. If Tim's correct, we might even have space for two.
It could be, yeah.
We could have enough content.
I've been letting them build up. I'm just that kind of a guy.
So, as always, our website, BabylonPodcast.com. Come on by, check out our archives. We have video, we have audio. And if you're feeling in the mood, donate.
Be nice.
Yeah, be nice.
Yeah,
help
sure.
us help us out a little bit, because Ustream is trying to nickel and dime us. Mm. Did I say that out loud? Yes, I did.
That was the outside voice.
You did.
It's okay. It's only on Ustream.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
And let's see. Email address, BabylonPodcast@gmail.com. Yep. If you want to record something yourself and email it in, that's the place to send it. And as always, our voicemail line is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year it came to us over here and over there and over here.
And
over there.
And we'll see you next time on the other side of the voices in the dark.
La 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 la. So did you watch your Lost Tales?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, I was finishing up about halfway through the second one, but I've seen him. I watched him again here recently.
Mm-hmm. You know what's funny? I did not realize that the DVD of Lost Tales is itself possessed.
Oh?
Yeah. Did you know that if you get distracted while the end credits are running for over there, the end credits finish.
Yeah.
And then it plays that pretty NATO blue screen with all the warnings and the everything.
Interpol is going to come get you.
Yeah, pretty much that, yeah. that whole scroll. And when that finishes,
yeah.
It goes back to the main menu.
Right.
Like you'd think it would, right?
Yeah.
But did you know that if you left it on the main menu unattended, it gives attitude and will start playing. It will start playing over here.
Really?
Yeah. So if you just leave it, because you know how with the regular B5 DVDs, you can leave it sit on either the main menu or the episodes menu or the chapters menu, and it will sit there until the player melts itself.
Yes, right. And you get those morphing face thing that's so weird and creepy.
Or any of the menus, even the menus where you could pick from each, you know, pick each episode.
Yeah, right.
It'll sit there, and it'll sit there, and it'll sit there. Wait, you know, like by your command, it'll sit there until you tell it to do something, right? This one will sit there on the main menu playing the music, and then after a few minutes, it goes, fine, we're just going to play anyway. And it starts.
That's funny.
I was not expecting that because I was sitting here going, playing on my laptop, getting things ready, you know, tweeting out the message that, hey, we're going to go live soon. Right. And I heard the music and then the music stopped and I didn't think anything of it because I thought it was cycling back around. And it's playing the intro where the station blows up and then it de-blows up. You know, it blows,
It
unblows up.
Right.
And I'm like, wait, what? And I sat there and I watched it. And certain enough, you know, went through the whole beginning and then you see the, you know, the whole scene with Simon having a, you know, a seizure.
Yeah.
A conniption, yeah. A conniption right there in the cargo hold. I'm like, you bastard, you went and autoplayed on me, didn't you? So, yeah, I did not know that was a capability in this DVD to just say, you're not going to watch me? Screw you. I'll play it and make you watch me. I did not know that about this disc.
I never let it go that far.
Well, I don't know if that's a feature of it just starting all over and then doing it, because I've actually never put it in and left it at the menu. Now, on the Babylon 5 DVDs, I've left it at the menu because it was like, okay, I finished that episode. I'm doing something else. I'll start the next one in a minute, you know? Because if I remember correctly, they don't have a play all feature like some of the newer ones where they'll play all four episodes on the disc, right?
Yeah, right.
So I've never actually left it in there before. So this is the first time it was stayed at the menu for a couple of minutes, and then it just said, screw you, play. I did not expect that. So think about that. This week is actually it was last week, but you know, calendar wise, but this week is the beginning of our 7th season of the Babylon podcast.
Wow.
I was tweeting that out with Gary yesterday. And then we got into an argument between purple and green that was just...
Of course you did.
It was Twitterific, let me tell you. Oh, my goodness. That was funny. But, it was 7 years ago this week that we began, or 6 years ago. Because this is the start. 6 years ago, the start of number 7. And it was literally, next week will be 4.5 years since Lost Tales first came out.
Yes.